This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
A couple of weeks ago, I got home from work, and a lot of times I do everything quickly. So usually I bound out of my car and I'm in the house in just a few seconds. But that night, for some reason, it was dark, and I stood by my car and I looked at the house, and it was all lit up. And just this overwhelming wave of nostalgia hit me, and I remembered all the years that I had stood by my car for a few minutes anticipating, oh man, when I go in there, all the kids will be in there, and they're going to be glad to see me, and I can love them and play with them, and it's going to be great. I love those years in my life. And while I was standing by my car, I realized, oh man, parenting is over. They're all out of college. They're all married. It's gone. It's over, you know. My time is gone. And just, grandkids are coming. Yes, I know that's true. But as I stood there, I also remembered the many times when we had young kids, especially, older parents would come up to us and say, hey, listen, make your parenting count because the time goes by so quickly. And guess what? I'm not sure I believe them because parenting was such an exhausting task. It was spilt milk and dirty rooms and you name it. And as beautiful as it was also this amazing burden, because think how great the parenting task is. I mean, you are responsible to shoulder the burden to be their source of life and love and growth. And it's an amazing thing. And also, I would just say, parenting is a very guilt-producing activity. Would you agree with me, parents? Parenting is a very guilt-producing activity because you always think, I could do better. You're always thinking about what the next thing to do is. So, guys, all those years went by, and it felt like it would never end. The school concerts, the sporting events, the back-to-school nights, the helping with homework. It would never end, but it did. And there I stood next to my car going, wow, they were right. You get your shot. And then parenting is over. In fact, parenting is the only relationship designed by God that measures success by how well it ends. That is, how well we make our children independent of us. Because that is the parenting job, right? Become independent of parents and become dependent upon God. That's the task. And so, guys, when I thought about this, I thought, okay, I'm going to talk about parenting. This is the first time I've talked about parenting without having children at home. And I thought, okay, what do I want to say? And I said, listen, I wanted to make parenting count, just like they told me back there. Make parenting count. And so what I want to talk about today is three ways in which we make parenting count. Three ways. These come from Scripture. Three ways that we make our parenting count. And the first way is really foundational to all of parenting. It's just simply this: to express unconditional love to my children in a way that they understand. Something you should know about children. You ready? Children are always asking two questions from the time they come out of the womb to the time they leave your home. Two questions. Do you love me? Can I get my own way? Believe me, those two questions are constantly being asked by your children. And when it comes to that first question, the answer must be a resounding yes. Do you love me? Yes. But also, you've got to say it in a way. You've got to act it out in a way that the child understands. And believe me, your answer is so critical. It won't determine, but it will certainly influence how they view themselves, how secure they are, how happy they are, how they relate to their peers, how they relate to people in authority. And parents have incredible power in shaping their kids' lives, and a lot of it will have to do with communicating love. So how do we communicate it? Of course we talk about it. There's no doubt about that. I think every child should be told they're loved multiple times every day, you know. But I want you to know something. Children are emotional beings, and because they are, the words themselves aren't always what they need. In fact, one of the points of Dr. Ross Campbell in his book, How to Really Love Your Child, is that while every parent loves their child, sometimes that parent doesn't know how to communicate it in a way that the child understands and perceives and really feels. Now, I would say that's true of a lighthouse. We love our children, but we need to learn maybe how to communicate it in a way that makes sense to our kids. Look what Paul tells the believers in Titus chapter 2. Train the younger women to love their husbands and children. Now, this is not talking about training someone to have a certain feeling. As you know, love in the Bible is not primarily a feeling. Love is a verb. Love is something that you do. So apparently, Paul thought that demonstrating love was something that could be learned. And parents, we can learn then how to demonstrate love to our children. And Campbell goes on to say that parents need to learn how to communicate love in ways that kids understand. His point is that every one of our kids have this emotional tank. And boy, when they feel love, their emotional tank is filled. And when they do not feel love, that tank gets lower. And a child whose tank is full, who feels love, they do their best. And a child who does not feel loved does not do his best in life. So what are one of those three things maybe that we can do that would actually show love, demonstrate love? Well, parents, first you got to know something. God is going to show you how to individually give your child love in a way that they understand. So there'll be many things that God will show you. But let me talk about three things briefly that every parent can do, and it's good for every child. And the first one is just simply affectionate physical contact. Now, you know, this just seems right, doesn't it? But you know that touching your child in appropriate ways that will give so much in his life. And we need to do it not only when it's necessary. That's one of the things that parents get used to doing. We touch a child when we're helping them dress or getting them out of the car. But later on, when we don't have to touch them, we forget how important it is. It's just an effortless way to communicate unconditional love. And I'm talking, of course, we hug and kiss them. When they get older, they don't like that as much. But we do that. That's important. But I'm talking about all kinds of other contact. I mean, a touch on the shoulder. When a kid gets to be a teen, maybe they don't like hugs as much, but you can still put your hand on their shoulder, you can pat their back, you can do anything that will say to them, hey, I love you. Mothers of young children can sometimes forget that they touch their children a lot. Use that time. If you're helping a child pick up their toys, if you're helping a child get out of the car, whatever, just simply a little hug and a smile, something that's a definite little moment can make all the difference in the world. And it assures that child that they are loved. Studies show that touch plays a surprising role in physical and mental well-being, and it starts at birth and it continues all the way up. Well, we all know in our own lives, think about your own life. You all know how a touch can calm and reassure and encourage. Well, that's for you as an adult, but what about children? They perceive reality primarily in an emotional way, and so touch can mean all the difference in the world. I'll give you an example. I have a friend who's about my age, and he told me recently of a memory he had growing up. What would happen is his father had a little ritual. He and his brother would get into bed, his father would come up, and for each one of them, he would just spend a moment just patting their back and rubbing their back and saying, I love you, son. And my friend told me that even today, that when he sees a parent doing something affectionate with a child, it'll almost bring a tear to his eye. Why, all these years later, did he have that reaction? It's because when his father took the time to pat him and rub his back, it was filling his emotional tank. And because that physical touch communicated love in a tangible way. Now, as kids age, the contact changes, all right? That's clear, right? You can't do the same things when the kid is 15 when they were 3. But listen, you figure out ways to keep the touch coming. You figure out whether it's wrestling around on the floor, whether it's, you know, giving just a kind of a man hug, you know, kind of whatever you got to do, man. You just make it happen because it still makes a difference. You know that studies show that fathers are 1/6 as physically affectionate as mothers are? And you know when the drop-off often comes for fathers? It's when their kids enter adolescence, 10, 11, 12, 13, and the kid themselves, they're kind of figure out who they are, and maybe they're a little more standoffish themselves, and so fathers tend to drop back a little bit. I'm saying fathers and mothers, you find the way. You find the way to fit in that physical touch, that affectionate touch, because it will fill their tank. So, number one, demonstrate love in a way that your kid can understand. Physical affection is a very good thing. Physical touch, really, of all kinds. Secondly, I'd say one of the biggest things is focused attention. And by focused attention, I just mean just time alone with that child. It's one of the best ways to express love. Psalm 145 says this, "The Lord is near to all who call on him." What an example. The Lord's near when we need him. And so parents, I want you to do what God does. God is near to us when we need him. You be near to your child when they need you. So when I'm talking about focused attention, it's just taking time alone with each child, focusing exclusively upon them. And it's one of the best possible ways to fill their tanks. Now, of course, in family life, there are a lot of times that we're together, and that's a good thing, isn't it? I loved our family meal time. We had more laughs around the table when our kids were growing up than I can think of almost any place. So it was a great time, and family outings, those were wonderful. But listen, we need to spend time alone with children because it fills their tank. It expresses love to them in ways that almost nothing else will. Some of you are saying, "Well, Art, I'm too busy." Listen, you would be amazed how 10 minutes with a preschooler can fill their tank. You play a little game with them or something. 10 minutes, it could fill their tank for hours. As the kid gets older, you know, one of the things I used to do is try to just get my older, my 10 or 12 or 14-year-old to go out and get a hamburger with me, you know, because I get to spend time with them. And it's time alone. And by the way, I get a good greasy hamburger too. That was good. You know, honey, it's the ministry here, you know, for my kid. You know, that was good. Okay, I didn't get many of those. So listen, this is the example. We can do what God does with us. And he takes us near to him and he provides what's needed. You know, something during this time today, what I want to do is I want to quote a few of my kids. My grown kids are all grown and married, but over the last couple of years, they've been writing notes to me, and I just want you to know, yes, they do write notes eventually. You think when they're kids, they will never thank you or anything, but they do eventually. And here's something that my daughter Sarah, my youngest daughter, who lives in Chicago, she wrote me this. "I appreciate the time you made sure to spend with me too, Dad. I remember in kindergarten, we were supposed to draw our favorite place to be, and I drew me in your lap in the family room reading a book. And I'm grateful that you took that time with each one of us and your love and tenderness for us." Well, she goes on. And so notice, the reason I read that is, notice as an adult, she thinks back, how was my tank filled? And she remembered sitting in my lap, that's physical contact, and she remembered time alone reading a book. I think for younger children, reading a book alone with them is one of the best things you can do because you're there, you can talk with them before and after, and it's fun. So I talked with a father this week who told me, yeah, my son loves to play Monopoly. And I'm not sure that I always want to play Monopoly, but I know what my son is really asking me. He's asking me, "Do you care about me? Do you love me? Do you have time for me?" And so this wise father saying, yeah, I got to do that. By the way, one time with my younger daughter, I had a Sorry. Anybody know what the game Sorry is? Yeah. I played 200 games of Sorry with her over months. And we had a tournament. And I would come home from work every day and go right to Sarah and play Sorry with her. And I want to tell you for sure, Sorry is a game of chance. I figured that out because she won. Okay. And it was 101-99. Okay. But she won. And why did I do it? Just there was only one reason. Focused attention. Now, one of the ways, and we're going to go quickly here, because you can figure out ways to demonstrate love. But one of the other ways is just positive eye contact. And you think, well, Art, that's so simple. That almost seems unimportant. And yet, positive eye contact is a concrete way to demonstrate love. And, you know, positive eye contact is looking straight in the eyes of your child and giving warmth, communicating warmth with your look. You maybe do that with a smile. You may do it any number of ways, but you're communicating, hey, you are special to me. And all of you know how eye contact works. You know that it can be pleasant or it can be unpleasant. In fact, most of us have had experiences where we were talking to some adult and they couldn't keep our eyes and they were kind of flirting around and, you know, from here to flitting around from here to there. You wonder, you know, what's going on? Well, your kids know, too, something from your eye contact, okay? And when a parent is smart about this, they do a lot of things to give eye contact. I many, many, many times even saw my child across the room and just did a smile or something like that just to say, boy, you are great. That's what I wanted to communicate with that eye contact. Now, I want you to know that just like you can do positive eye contact, you can use negative eye contact too much. And you know what I'm talking about. Now, you look at me when I'm talking to you. And so we use contact for critical statements and for things that really are hurtful, that are negative. Now, by the way, it's okay, of course, to use direct eye contact when you're disciplining. That's just fine. But if that's the major time you get eye contact, it's going to be painful. It's not going to be a good deal. Eye contact, your kids should say, I like being with dad and mom. I like when they talk, you look at me normally, it's a good thing. And so that eye contact, if you use that too much, it will actually destroy something that's actually a very, very good thing. Another terrible, I think, mistake that parents sometimes make is somehow using lack of eye contact as a punishment device. That is, let's suppose your child got into timeout. One lady told me this one time. Yeah, when the child goes into timeout, after they get out of timeout, I just don't look at them for an hour because they need to be punished, okay? And I'm thinking, not smart, lady. And not only did I think it, I actually, you know, helped her there a little bit. Not a good idea because, hey, your kids take their lumps, then you give them what they need. Oftentimes, after discipline, children come around looking for affirmation. They want to know, am I still okay, daddy? You know, they want to know that. And one of the ways you give it is by positive eye contact. So, you guys, you got to express. We have to express love in ways that our kids understand. God will give you wisdom about this, but I've mentioned three ways that really help. Just focus attention and positive eye contact and physical contact. All of these say, I love you. And in fact, let me read to you here's from my oldest daughter. She's 30. And she gave me this card that says, you're always on the right side of that fine line between cool and dorky, okay? So what she said is, she said, well, Dad, you're special to me. I can't imagine having been brought up in a, now remember, this is a Father's Day card, so it's, you know, it's always better than you really are. I can't imagine being brought up in a more loving, caring home, and I hope you have a great Father's Day knowing that you have three children who are reflections of your kindness and ability to love and forgive. You know, what is she saying? Oh, somehow you communicated it. And I want you to know, guys, we don't always get it right. Is any parent perfect? No way. Do we make plenty of mistakes? We do. But I want you to know this love deal, you can get right. Love is a lot of what your child needs, and they need it in concrete ways that they understand, and you can do it. Now, I said we're going to talk about parenting that counts. One way you make parenting count is you just give them lots of love in ways that they understand. A second thing is that you do is you've got to discipline them. Kids in the congregation, they were saying, man, it was going so well up till now. Okay. But that's what you need. Remember the two questions kids are asking. Do you love me? Can I get my own way? You answer yes to the first question. No to the second question. Because it is important. The scriptures say this over and over again. Look what it says in Proverbs 13. Those who spare the rod of discipline hate their children. Those who love their children care enough to discipline them. And in fact, Proverbs 19 goes even further. Discipline your children while they are young enough to learn. If you don't, you're helping them destroy themselves. So what's the major issue? Why do kids try to get their own way? What is it? Well, the Proverbs tell us again, Proverbs 22. Here's the problem. A youngster's heart is filled with foolishness, but physical discipline will drive it away. The NIV says foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, and foolishness is simply the mistaken idea that things will be better if I get my own way. That's what foolishness is. Do any of you know a 40-year-old foolish person? Yes, you do. Yeah, all of us know people who never learned that it wasn't better to get your own way. It was always better to go God's way. And our job as parents is to drive foolishness out and build wisdom in. And the way that we drive foolishness out is often has a lot to do with discipline. It's natural for a child to say, hey, I know what dad and mom wants, but I want my own way. That's natural. In fact, a 2 or 3 year old has one prime directive: get my own way. And a teenager is not far behind sometimes, okay? As a child gets older, what we want to see is wisdom replacing foolishness. And they becoming more and more dependent upon God, more and more able to discipline themselves in their life. So what is discipline then? Discipline is simply setting limits and enforcing limits. That, it could be said many other ways, but it basically is setting limits and then enforcing those limits. You set boundaries and you say you may not go beyond this boundary in what you say, in what you do, and in what your attitude, in the attitude that you hold. And if you do, I will introduce pain. Okay, that's the enforcing part. You introduce some pain. Okay? There must be consequences waiting when the child goes beyond the boundary. So you got to set the limits, but you've got to enforce them. But I want you to know, parents, your children will test your limits. I had great kids. They all turned out wonderfully, but they all tested limits at some times because they wanted to know what would go on. Discipline is absolutely needed. You cannot allow your children to win the battle of wills. Because if they win the battle of wills, they have lost in life. They will never know how to discipline themselves, and that is absolutely needed in real life. That they learn how to discipline themselves. So you've got to win. And in fact, James Dobson, I remember many years ago I read this story. James Dobson, when he was a psychologist, he had a woman come into his office with her 13-year-old son, and this 13-year-old son was totally out of control. He was taking drugs. He would not do anything his mother said. He was totally out of control. And Dobson asked this lady, well, he said, now, ma'am, do you remember, was there a particular time that you remember that you lost it with your son? And he said, yeah, I know exactly when it was. How often would that happen? She said, yeah, I know when it happened. My child, she went on to tell the story that her child had been 3 years old, and she set the child in the crib, and she wanted the child to lay down. And instead of laying down, the child stood up and spit in her face. Now, she then proceeded to try to explain to the child how spitting in the face was wrong and bad and that should not be done, and then the child spit in her face again. And then she got so flustered, she walked out of the room. And here's what she told Dobson. Listen, from that day forward, I never had control again. In other words, she lost, and that meant that the child lost. That mother did not enforce the limits. You know, our firstborn, Jenny, is 30 now, but when she was about 3, she went into this, I don't know, zone. She turned 3. She now was in the strong-willed zone. I mean, she would make the smallest thing a pain. She would say no to everything. Time to pick up your toys now, honey. No! Time to get dressed now, honey. No! It was all no, no, no. And what happened was that over 2 years, Nam and I determined that Jenny would not win. That she would not win. And so it was an absolute painful 2 years with her. Absolutely painful. And then about age 5, Jenny now will tell you, this was the worst day of my life. She went through this whole thing of, you know, oh, timeout. Oh, I'm not going to timeout. No, I'm not going to timeout. Finally, that'll be a spanking. And it just went all. And finally, at the end of that time, it's like something snapped. And she said, oh, I cannot get my own way. And from that moment on, she did as we asked her to do. Now, guys, I want you to know, we didn't break her spirit at all. We broke her will. You don't want to break a child's spirit. But we did break her will. And what happened is, I can't even tell you what her teen years would have been like had we not done that. And as a matter of fact, if you met Jenny today, you would say, man, she is a strong person. There's no doubt she's a strong person. She has accomplished a lot in life. She's a strong young woman. But a lot of it had to do, I think, with not allowing her to rule the roost. Now, my son John has written me a card, too, recently. Now, John is our fun young man. He and I have a sense of humor together. He gave me a card that has a couple on the front that has, it's kind of a 50s couple, you can tell. And the guy has a phone, and he's smiling, and he's saying, jail? Why no, officer, there must be some mistake. Our son is at the library. Okay. So that's my son's card. He writes this. Now, he overstates this, because remember, this is Father's Day. He's overstating a little bit. He says, I've become who I am because of who you made me, and that's a good thing. I appreciate the openness you always had with me and the careful discipline growing up. Careful. I mean, here's a boy who says, man, I appreciate the careful discipline. So believe me, kids understand on some level, they understand, wow, this makes a difference. Now, it's very important to understand the difference between discipline and punishment. God never punishes you if you're his kid. If you're a child of God, he will never, ever punish you. He will only discipline you for your good. And so I've listed a few things there in your chart, the differences between discipline and punishment. The purpose of punishment is really just to inflict a penalty. I want to penalize you. You did something wrong, and I'm going to penalize you. But the purpose of discipline is to promote growth. I want to train you. I want you to be better. The focus of punishment is often on the past. Well, you did this in the past. You were wrong. You're going to be punished. But the focus of discipline is often the future. I want you to learn how to do the right thing the next time. The attitude of the parent in punishment is often anger. You know, you did this to me, now I'm going to do this back to you. Guys, that will hurt your child, believe me. In fact, all the scriptures say you should never vent your anger. And particularly, Ephesians 6:4 says you should not make your child angry. And you do that when you vent on them. So you can't do that. The attitude of the parent who is disciplining is one of love. Hey, I want you to make it in this world. I love you enough to do what's necessary. And what's the result? You guys, the result of punishment is often fear and guilt and anger. These kids, yeah, they may do what you tell them, but they are afraid. They feel much anger. But what happens when you discipline a child? Wow, they feel so secure because they know where the boundaries are. They know they're secure. They know what's what. And not only that, it often results in self-control. Why? Because those external controls you put on them eventually go to the inside of their life. Excuse me, and they become self-controlled. So very, very different. Now, we don't have time to talk about specific methods of discipline. We have a class here. It's hard to get into. Tim Ashcraft, you know, that's hard to get into. But people can get into Tim's class, Kim Katie's class. Also, we're offering a shorter class February 23rd around Awanas. If you have children in Awanas on Tuesday nights, we're offering, I think, a 6 to 8 week class called Visionary Parenting. It gives you some input. And by the way, on Tuesday nights, there's no room in this church. I don't know if you know that. On Tuesday nights, there's no room anywhere. So we asked South Hill Baptist Church to be the place. So it's just down the road. But we're hosting it. We're running it. And it's something from Lighthouse. So if you're interested in that, Pastor Paul will be out in the foyer later, and you can sign up for it. So, but the bottom line is, we don't have time for methods. But listen, set limits, enforce limits. That will make all the difference in your child's heart. Now, you're going to make your parenting count? First of all, show love in ways that they understand. Number two, come on, discipline. Set limits, enforce limits. It'll make parenting count if you do that. And finally, the third way that I've suggested here that you make parenting count is you design your family life to spiritually shape your child's heart. Guys, in my pastoral life, more than one time, I have heard from somebody, some parent, something like this. You know, I just don't give my kids much instruction, or I don't take my kids to church, or because, after all, they're going to have to decide for themselves. So I have a little bit of a hands-off there, and I know that they'll just come to the best decisions. And guys, inside, I know I want to be kind and loving to everybody, so I don't say what's really on my mind, which is really, wake up! What are you trying to do to your kid? Don't you know that they need your instruction? Don't you know that what the Scripture says? Here's Jesus' take on what's most important in life. Look what it says in Matthew 22. Teacher, what's the greatest commandment in the law? Well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. Now, guys, I'd say that there's a tremendous amount of clarity in that statement. Would you agree? Tremendous clarity. Jesus said, this must top the list of what's most important. Make God the center of your life, the one who impacts every area, every decision you make, every place you go, every aspect of your worldview, every moral choice. Come on, God cannot be an add-on to our life. He's got to be the center of our lives. And what we find out in many other parts of the Bible is if we'll do that, guess what will happen? Christian character will grow in our lives. We'll become more and more like Christ. Now, as you know, Jesus, when he spoke this word, he was quoting Deuteronomy 6. Let's go there because it has even a little bit more information about how to shape family life. Look what it says. Verse 5. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and your strength. And it goes on. These commandments that I give you are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. It says three principles about love for God in family life. And you know what the first principle is? Love for God starts with the parents. Look what it says. You love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and spirit. You do it. Most of us know that love for God is not taught so much as caught. There's a huge element of truth to that statement. Why? Because when kids see that our words match our actions, God has greater entrance into their lives. I'll give you one example. The example is marriage. You know, here's what my daughter says about that. I also love that I have an example of your marriage. Having grown up in a home like this is, I'm quite certain, a miracle. I love seeing the way you treat mom. You are tender toward her and gentle and self-sacrificing, and you let the Lord teach you how to be a good husband and a good father. I just say, again, remember that's all overstated because it's Father's Day. But the great thing that I see there is that Sarah says, oh, I saw the example. Your words were there, but your actions were there. And when we set that example, man, we got to know that kids are watching. They understand. They know. If you say you love God and then you do the wrong thing, they know it. And the second truth, though, out of this passage is simply this. What this passage goes on to say, and unapologetically, really, is that parents must spiritually shape their children's heart to know and love God. That's it. Now, if a home is a safe place, a home is a place where love for God is lived out, we have entrance into that child's heart. This passage says here, look, the commands are to be upon your hearts. Meaning, of course, that this isn't to be superficial following of God. You don't teach your children here, follow all the little rules out here. No, you teach your child that love for God is a heart thing. It starts from the inside out. So he's giving us some instruction here. Start with the heart. Always be thinking about the heart of your child. And that's where real life is. And believe me, there's always going to be someone or something after your child's heart. You don't believe me? There's going to be something or someone after your child's heart. It'll be some moral confusion, some godless theology. Something is going to be out there trying to grab your kid's heart. But thankfully, God has given parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles far greater power than anything out there. I want you to know that. Parent, you got to know this. You have far more power than anything else out there. So, let me just say this very clearly. There is no, well, my child needs to decide for themselves, and so I'm not going to. No! Of course they need to decide for themselves. And later on, as adults or young adults, they're going to have to reaffirm what you taught them. That's okay. But please do not abdicate your role. In fact, look at verse 7, because it just says, you be active. Look what it says. Impress them on your children. In other words, impress the truths, God's truths. Another translation says, teach them diligently. I like the word impress, though, because it kind of helps us see the balance that we face as parents, because we want to really strongly say the truth, but we want to do it in a way that's not too strong, you know. And I want to tell you, just because of the kind of person I am, I don't want to impress truths. I want to imprint truths. You know, I want to cut truths into their psyche. You know, that's the kind of guy I am. But I had to learn, no. Listen, I need to be active. I need to be prayerful. I need to be consistent. But also I need to do it with love and concern and warmth and even good humor. In my family, good humor has gone a long way in helping us to come to grips with what all of this means. You know, when my each one of my kids got into the seventh grade, I said to them, well, guy or honey or whoever it was, usually I call them honey and sis and things like that because I can't remember their names. I would just say, you know, listen, what I'd really like to do this year, this seventh grade year in school, I'd really like to have a quiet time with you. So we could come together, we could read a little scripture, we could say, well, what does this say? What does this mean? And then we could pray together. It won't take very long, and it didn't. It was like a 12-minute deal. And I really hoped they were going to say yes, because I wasn't going to force them to do it. But they said yes. And so I had that time with them to shape their hearts, to see where they're at, to love on them, and to look at the scriptures and to pray together. I bring that up only because I'm just saying, yeah, you can't force often what's there, but you can always try to do the impressing. You can impress their hearts. You can always do the very best you can. Listen, someone or something is going to try to seize your child's heart, believe me. And they're going to have to reaffirm what you teach them, but please teach them. God's plan is for you to do that. Now, this has one other principle from the scripture. Family life must revolve around love for God. Look what it says. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Guys, I think that pretty well says let love for God just be the center thing in your house, doesn't it? That's exactly what it says. Basically, the emphasis is about just talking about God's truth, applying God's truth in family life. And it even gives you four times of the day that might be good times to do that. Although I don't really think the scripture means, you know, utilize these times every day so much as it's saying, listen, do life with God. You in the family life Always make sure in the family life, you're doing life with God. That whatever comes up at whatever time, it's always with a godly perspective. And if you think about it, often this is not around about formal teaching. I'm going to let you know a little secret about myself. I'm a pastor, but I never did that well at formal teaching in my family. We did numbers of things when the kids were growing up, but I always felt like, oh man, this isn't that great. And then a lot of times, it's very hard. We had 7 years between our first and last child, so it's really hard to have a family time of formal teaching where a 7-year-old and a 14-year-old get it together and think, this was so super. One of them is going to be saying, eh. So I want you to know that I didn't do that great at formal teaching, but think about this. It's really not about formal teaching. Look at the times as it mentions. First of all, it says in the morning. Well, hey, you're getting ready for the day. And all of a sudden you ask the child, hey, listen, what are you going to be doing today? And you detect there's going to be some sort of challenge. Well, what do? You pray with them. And when you pray with them, what are you teaching? You're teaching them that we are dependent upon God and we can always go to Him for His help. Or now you're sitting in the family room and you're watching TV and you say, well, perfect time to have a talk. You know, what are our standards going to be as we watch television? What are our standards as a family going to be? What are you teaching them? God has values and we ought to come alongside what His values are. Or you're on an outing and things don't go well. Guys, I wish I had time to describe the 10 outings that I remember the most vividly when it didn't go well. And some of them are quite funny, but I don't have time. But believe me, sometimes things will not go well. Man, think about that. What a great opportunity to talk. Because you've got to teach your kids how to deal with negatives in a godly way. Listen. If you teach your children how to deal with negatives in a godly way, you have done them a huge favor. Because part of what I see in adults is people get hurt or they have life treat them not so badly. And instead of reaching out to God and continuing to love and continue to do what God tells them to do, they can get bitter or critical or whatever. You teach your children a lot when you teach them how to handle negatives. And then how about the end of the day? Well, maybe you're praying together and you say, well, guys, let's just talk about what we can be thankful for during the day. What are you teaching them when you do that? Oh, every good gift comes from God. And we ought to be thankful for every good gift that we have. Guys, you see, it's often informal, but basically it is still putting God at the center. Do you know what? Pastor Mike Holman has observed this, that in our society, we are on a treadmill to nowhere. And what he means is this. I think he's right. What he means is this. In family after family after family across America, it's something like this. Become more, have more, do more, repeat. That's it. That's family life. Have more, do more, become more, repeat. Now, guys, in the family life, you know, Holman says, reminds us that we are on a long journey to somewhere. In other words, what we do in a family is eternal. The things that we teach, the love that we project, all those things, they take us into eternity. So all the things that we think are so important, man, they don't hold a candle to the eternal results of loving and disciplining and shaping our child. Not anything close. You guys, parenting goes by so quickly. And I want us, every parent in this room, I want us to have parenting that counts. I want us to be thinking about that. To know that our children are so precious to God. And to help them to become independent of us and dependent upon God. That's the parenting task. My prayer is that you'll be encouraged. I don't want to discourage you today. I already told you that I know that parenting is a very guilt-producing activity. I already told you that no parent is perfect. But I hope that today you can say, yeah, we can move forward. We can make our parenting count. We can do what's necessary. And if you're a grandparent or aunt or uncle, I hope that you've gleaned a few things. Hey, these are how we want to interact with the children in our lives to give them what they need. Parenting is a journey, and it's a journey that leads all the way into eternity.
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.